Hello, I'm Simon Burton and welcome to Arts Roundup. This week's programme's devoted to sculptures that you can get to grips with physically, some visiting for celebrities you can meet and learn from, a naive painter's work you shouldn't miss, and how emerging local artists have a chance to get some professional feedback. In this edition, Kettle's Yard Gallery previews an exhibition by fisherman painter Alfred Wallace, which opens this morning and tells the story of an extraordinary man inspired by a life working at sea. Cambridge's Spring Wordfest gets underway in its 10th year and goes from strength to strength as a string of big names engage with Cambridge audiences. We look at the sculpture promenade in the gardens of the Fitzwilliam Museum and also hear about two print exhibitions which give a rare chance to see work usually hidden and protected in the archives. And Aidan Abett's Art Space invites emerging local artists to get valuable feedback on their work and unveils a new wooden sculpture just installed and previews spring events. Despite it being visibly under the builders' awnings during redevelopment, Cambridge University's Kettle's Yard Gallery has opened a new exhibition today with its in-house collection of oil paintings by Cornish fisherman painter Alfred Wallace. A unique and remarkable naive painter, Wallace began painting in oils very late in life in 1922 after his wife died, and despite having no artistic training, he demonstrated an extraordinary talent. Drawing inspiration from boats, yachts and sometimes stormy maritime settings of the Atlantic. His images of fishing ports on the Cornish coast capture the spirit and atmosphere of his world and its settings. He worked largely from memory as a mariner and fisherman. Curator of the exhibition, Lizzie Fisher, introduces the work. Alfred Wallace, a very famous painter, can you tell me a little bit about who he was, what kind of man he was?
Wallace was a fisherman and a mariner. He started painting in 1928, he died in 1942, so that was the last 20 years of his life.
Yeah, so it's strange that a man of such talent started actually painting so late in his life, because he was this fisherman, this traveller, the sea-going manual worker, and then he turned into the most prolific artist.
Well, there are accounts of him sketching and doing, doodles or little notes with drawings when he was a sailor or when he was running his marine stores in St. Ives. So there's a possibility that he always had an inclination to paint or draw, but it didn't really find full fruition until he had the time to do it.
And then he commenced doing it with no artistic training whatsoever.
He did start painting with what was about, so he bought paints from the local store in very limited colours. He used thrown away cardboard boxes, cut them to the shapes he wanted them, and often used the colours and the shapes of the card to lead into the compositions that he started to make. So he was very intuitive about the way that he started to paint.
Now the images are very sort of well-weathered. They come from the sea, they come from his life as a fisherman, and that's really what gives them their depth and content, isn't it? It's that kind of, they're almost sort of salted, you know, images, if you see what I mean.
Yes, certainly. And I think also his technique of mixing the paint while he was applying it gives the paint quite an energy that you don't find in many other artists' work. Certainly the colours and the emotional energy, the intensity that he manages to sort of channel into the paintings is very, very compelling.
Now, the ports depicted in some of them, there are 50 images here of all kinds of things, ships, fish, ports and things like that, but they're also, actually, as well as being painted in the way they are, they're quite accurate as well, aren't they, in terms of what the features in them.
Yes, it's interesting that Wallace didn't actually go out and paint the boats as he was looking at them. When he started to paint, he would work at home, and so everything he was drawing on were his memories and his experiences of sailing from quite a long time ago. But yes, as you said, a number of people have pointed out that his rendering of the different ships, the brigantines or the schooners or the lugboats, are all very, very accurate in terms of the number of sails and the engines, the position and so forth. And of course also the depiction of harbours. You may find a number of geographical features moved around a little bit modified, but they're still recognisable. So it's very easy to locate the scenes that he's painted.
Now, why did Ben Nicholson decide to pick up and promote his work?
Well, Ben and Christopher Woods were in St. Ives one summer in 1928, and they happened to walk past Wallace's house. The door was open and they saw Wallace painting, and his whole front room was full of these pictures of boats and ships and harbours, and they were immediately drawn to them, I suppose, interested in the subject matter and the way that Wallace was painting, but also the sheer volume of work that was happening, and I suppose curiosity drew them. But of course, when Ben saw them, he saw an intensity and a directness that he was striving for in his own work.
Now, certain things were going on at that particular time in St Ives. Obviously, there's a link also, wasn't there, with von Ribbentrop?
Yes, did you pick up on the exhibition we had last summer?
Yes, I did.
Andrew Lanyon, son of Peter Lanyon, curated. Yes, there are stories about espionage and the Germans being interested in that corner of the world. I'm not sure, I certainly haven't read any accounts of Wallace knowing anything about this or being involved in that scene.
Now how did Jim Ead acquire all of these paintings for Kettle's Yard?
Oh, that's a nice story, actually. Well, it was Ben Nicholson who went back to London. Jim was in Hampstead at the time, and Ben said, look, I found this amazing work, have a look at it. And he gave a one or two works to Jim, and immediately Jim saw the potential. He started to hang Wallace's work in his office, which was at the Tate Gallery at the time, and then Jim began a correspondence with Wallace for about 10 years where Jim would write and, well, actually it was the other way around. Wallace would send pictures. As soon as he'd finished painting them, he'd bundle them up in a parcel of string, send them with a note to Jim. Then Jim would look at the work, select the ones he wanted, and send the rest back with payment for the work. And so they corresponded like this for a long time.
Obviously around us there's a lot of building work going on. Yeah. The Kettle's Yard development, how is that coming along and what will that produce?
Well, it's coming along slow but surely. Yeah. We've put up the hoardings and we've done the archaeology, and we're in the process of digging down, because we'll be building a large new education space actually in the basement of the new extension, and then that of course is going to take a great deal of time to do, but then the rest of the building will go up, and all being well, we should be open again towards the end of next year. We, Kettle's Yard, own one of the largest collections of Wallace's in the country, and this exhibition will include up to 40 works, but we also have works on display in the house, which is still fully open to the public. And so if you want to know more, see the exhibition, but do pay a visit to the house if you've never been.
Big, imposing and eye-catching sculptures that are designed to be touched, explored and even climbed on are attracting art lovers and children alike in the grounds of the Fitzwilliam Museum. The 2012 Sculpture Promenade features 19 large-scale works for people to discover, and are making quite an impact on visitors who are checking out all the viewing angles and textures and how they alter the way we see the world that they're set in. The works by three renowned artists include famous sculptures, an enormous bronze work entitled Tensai Tenmoko by Ken Yasuda, the sculpture The Space Within by Helene Blumensfield, and Little Seed by Peter Randall Page, a large and puzzling bubble-covered stone. Museum spokesman Lucy Theobald introduces the work.
What is the Sculpture Promenade all about?
Well, the Sculpture Promenade is really about bringing some of the best in contemporary art out into the street of Cambridge, in a place where anybody can see it, access it and interact with it, and also so that it's free. The three artists that we've got on display here today are international artists. They're from all around the world. We've got Ken Yasuda from Japan, Helene Blumenfeld, who is an American artist who's based in Cambridge, and Peter Randall Page, who is a British artist from Devon. They're all three very different artists and create works in very different styles, but as you can see, the works are enormous, they're huge, they're monumental, so you really will be able to see them as you walk down the street.
Yes, I mean, you're looking at something, a good 11 feet high, 14 feet across or something like that?
I'm guessing about that much. Yeah, I don't have the exact size, but it's at least double my height, and I'm about 5'2". And at least my length and a bit half across. This work is called Tensei Tomoku, and it's by Ken Yasuda. Ken is a really famous Japanese artist, and one of the key concepts in his work is that he believes really very much in linking the spiritual world and the imagination world with the world of reality and with the ground, things which are real. And he believes that his sculpture and his work can almost create a doorway, a key, an aperture into another world, a world of the imagination and of the spirit.
It seems to be very profound, doesn't it?
It is, yeah, really, yeah. It is quite profound. But if you actually speak to him, meet with him, he's the loveliest, sweetest guy.
Yeah.
And one of the other things he really believes in is that people should really interact with his work. One of the things he said to me is, I really hope that the children of Cambridge come and play around my sculptures. When I design them, I want them to touch them, to lie on them, to engage with them, because he wants to inspire people wholly with the work that he does.
And now the promenade has a sort of plot to it, doesn't it, as you go through the sculpture promenade. What happens at each sculpture? What do you do?
Okay, well, you can go through and experience them in all different ways. With Cam's works, they're very interactive. Here we have Tensei Tomoku. We're looking through it. We've got this aperture creating a window into kind of this area in Cambridge and a new imaginative space. And if we go beyond that, we enter the works of Helene Blumenfeld. Now, Helene's works are very much about her emotional response to things. And the work that I really want to focus on here today is Cleopatra. Now, that has a very interesting story because it was actually designed for the Fitzwilliam Museum. And it's created in marble, and it's based on the classical figure of Cleopatra, Queen Cleopatra. And the ripples and folds in it are representative of classical sculpture, and that's meant to complement the columns of the museum on the front. So it complements the neoclassical sculpture. Going on from that, we go into Peter Randall Page's works. Now, he approaches it yet again in a very different style. He's all about organic forms, about bringing nature into contemporary society. One of the things that he feels is that we're very removed from nature, true nature, and he tries to recreate the geometric patterns that you find in seeds and plants, and even in things, organic forms like flesh and brain and whatever. So if you go through and look at his works, and I particularly recommend looking at the work Seed, you'll see these geometric forms recreated in stone.
Okay, we're in front of Cleopatra now, a wonderful marble. It's not a bust, it's a sculpture, obviously, but it has bust-like qualities and masses of different features on it. And it does blend in very well with the museum frontage, doesn't it?
Yes. The wonderful thing about seeing this particular sculpture here in front of the columns of the museum is that it is the first time that it's been displayed here. And as it was designed to sit in front of this particular facade, it really was meant to be displayed here. And seeing it here, looking up at the facade, you can really see how it works with it and interacts with it. The folds and ripples of the sculpture really complement the lines that are going up the museum building. And also, the fact that it's very contemporary but harks back to classical sculpture creates a nice contrast between the old and the new, which I think is something that Helene really wanted to show with this particular work.
We're now in front of Seed, which is an enormous stone with lots of bubbles all over the outside of it. It looks like something that could have arrived from another planet.
It does, and if you were looking at a tiny seed or a tiny organic form and you blew it up, they can look quite alien. If you ever look at something under a microscope and see how the geometric patterns join together, it can almost seem like an alien object. This particular work was designed by Peter Randall Page. This is the small version of the big version of Seed. This is Little Seed, and there's Big Seed, or Seed, which is at the Eden Project in Cornwall, which was a very famous work which went up just a few years ago. With this particular work, he's recreating all of the mathematical principles one sees in plant life. And as you can see, it is large, but the even larger version is absolutely massive, and it gives a really good impression of how he works with stone to create organic forms.
It's great to have, you've got something like 8 sculptures here on the lawn. They're all huge pieces of rock. Yeah. There's also one that you can actually lie on top of, isn't there?
Yes, that's one of Kan Yasuda's works. He's actually created, as I said before, his works are very, he's very keen on people interacting with them, touching with them, being physically inspired by them. And one of his works that you can see, which is just beyond Tensei Tomoku, the big bronze arch, is a large flat stone, which if you touch it, is really smooth and has a wonderful smooth texture of stone. And actually there are holes in it which you're meant to look through to get a kind of spiritual impression. And we often see people lying on top of it to kind of experience the feeling between earth and ground. The sculpture promenade at the Fitzwilliam Museum is running all year, so it will run until January 2013. It's free, and there's a guide to pick up to take you around the grounds here at the museum.
The museum's also just opened 2 new and exciting print exhibitions running till October. designed to impress, delves into the museum's colossal print archives to produce the most exciting prints in the collection. It's a rare chance to see work that's normally too light sensitive or valuable to risk daily display. The prints run from the Renaissance era right up to the present day and include surprises such as Picasso, Dürer and Degas. William Blake's delicately coloured Marriage of Heaven and Hell's on display, a highlight not to be missed, and Rembrandt's The Three Crosses is featured, along with work by Goya. A second print show, entitled Edgeland, looks at two portfolios by contemporary artists George Shaw and Michael Landy, which centres on the edges of British cities like Coventry, which are neither urban or rural, and represents an interesting hinterland between the two worlds, leading to some intense observations. It asks, do we see these areas as neglected wastelands, or are they perhaps a wonderland seen from a different angle? George Shaw was shortlisted for the 2011 Turner Prize, and his work is largely autobiographical, having himself been brought up in a Coventry suburban council estate, which he now feels out of place in when he revisits. It's about haunting memory and then seeing past things in a new light. Michael Landy's most famous exhibition was in 2001 called Breakdown, where he catalogued and destroyed all his material possessions in an empty shop in Oxford Street. Here he looks at the weird vegetation and weeds discovered in these edgeland areas. The Fitzwilliam Senior Assistant Keeper of Prints, Craig Hartley.
Craig, there are two print exhibitions taking place here at the Fitz at the moment. They're both new. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Well, one of them is the exhibition called Designed to Impress, which is highlights from our print collection. And that is a selection of some of the most attractive and exciting prints in the collection, ranging from the Renaissance to the present day.
Yeah.
The other exhibition is Edgelands, which is the work of two contemporary artists, both looking at the fringes of cities, the places where the city merges into the countryside, an undefined area that isn't usually looked at.
Are these usually on view, or is this a special opportunity really to see them?
Because they're quite fragile when exposed in the light, we can only expose them for a short period of time, and we have over 100,000 prints in the collection, so obviously we can only show a few at any one time. So this is a rare opportunity to see these particular prints. There's a great variety of subjects. There are landscapes, cityscapes, there are prints of gods, of monsters, there are religious subjects, there are visionary subjects by people like Blake and Goya, and there are also portraits of people as well.
Okay, so these are actually very, very well-known images from very well-known artists all the way across the board.
Well, a lot of them are well-known, but some of them aren't. There are surprises that people won't know but might find intriguing and attractive.
Okay, can we move on to the other exhibition?
Well, Edgelands brings together the work of two quite prominent contemporary artists, George Shaw, who was nominated for the Turner Prize last year, and Michael Landy, and they both work on the edge of cities, or produced work on the edge of cities. George Shaw's work is characteristically the outskirts of Coventry, where he was brought up, and he's interested in how his memories of the place shows the place changing and slightly shifting. So you get very much his feeling of being slightly out of place in his own past as he revisits it. Michael Landy's work is a series of very beautiful prints of weeds. They're very carefully and meticulously drawn. But what he was doing really was sort of rescuing the weeds from neglect, taking them back to his studio, wrapping their roots in damp cotton wool, and carefully drawing them day after day after day. And so not only preserving them through his nurture and through the prints, but by giving them to us to look at, he's giving them a life outside the life that they already had. Because his previous work was very much rather controversial installations, where he destroyed all of his 7,000 possessions in a shop in Oxford Street in London, and then buried them in a landfill site, which you would think was almost the opposite to nurturing weeds. But he's interested in the way society throws things away or neglects things, and that's the link between the weeds and the destroyed possessions. You found us.
This is Cambridge 105. Cambridge's Spring Word Fest is about to commence and celebrates its 10th year as a cornerstone of the city's literary scene, sucking in a brace of big names to generate bright creative sparks among budding writers in the city. The celebrity lineup includes crime writer Ian Rankin, politician Michael Portillo, and comedian Julian Clary, who's now an aspiring novelist currently on book number 3. The WordFest brings together writers, journalists, comedians, academics, and presenters in 74 events over 3 days, the 13th, 14th, and 15th of April. The series is designed to get people enthused about writing, discussing hot topics, and looking at creating fiction, non-fiction, poetry, and the craft of writing. People can learn about everything from ghostwriting to crime writing and poetry technique in a series of workshops and masterclasses. Among the festival guests is Middle East hostage John McCarthy and many novelists including Alan Hollinghurst, Ian Banks, Margaret Drabble, Helen Dunmore and William Boyd. Journos include Newsnight's economic editor Paul Mason and Anthony Giddens, who'll tackle questions on global politics with audiences. Children's laureate Michael Rosen will give sessions on everything from aliens to beast quests for kids. The WordFest's founder and director Kathy Moore.
Julian Clary is, as we all know, he's one of Britain's best loved and most enduring entertainers. Yeah. And he is setting himself up as a novelist. And I think actually this is his third novel. And he's got the fantastic title of Briefs Encountered. So I guess from the title, we're not expecting a very serious novel. He'll be talking about that and reading from it and hopefully providing us all with much entertainment in the Cambridge Union on Saturday.
You also have events, don't you? Workshops and things like that where people can learn how to write. What happens in one of those?
We try to pick tutors who are very good in their field, who are accomplished published writers in their own and respected in their own particular area. I mean, this year we have Catherine Hughes coming to do a workshop on writing creative non-fiction. I mean, she's a very successful biographer. We have a ghostwriting workshop this year from a famous ghostwriter, somebody who's actually written Robbie Williams's, just for example, biography. And they take a different form. I mean, sometimes the people talk from the front and talk about the craft and stimulate in that way. Others actually have some writing exercises and aim to improve the delegates writing by the time they leave.
What will this? What will the WordFest have for children and families this year?
We've got our biggest children's festival ever this year. We have three days with full days of events on the Friday and the Saturday, and then there's a couple of events actually with beloved ex-performer children's laureate Michael Rosen on the Sunday, which actually has now sold out. I mean, he's hugely entertaining and popular figure, but we have everything from Paddington Bear, Lego, Beast Quest, Andy Stanton, who's written the wonderful Mr. Gum books, a real range of authors for children. There's a Virginia Woolf walking tour that starts at the Fitzwilliam Museum, and it looks at I think Virginia Woolf manuscript, a table that she reputedly ate dinner off that was at King's College, but that's now has found a home in Newnham College. There's a walking tour for that, and then Claire Nicholson, this same woman, is doing a workshop, a fascinating workshop on the Friday afternoon at Newnham College, which is a workshop looking at how to read A Room of One's Own rather than how to write. And for me, that would be this kind of workshop that I would probably go to.
It has been a huge success, hasn't it?
It has been a huge success. Yeah. I've been very, very lucky because people in the whole Cambridge community are very supportive in terms of, being attendees, becoming friends of the festival. Sponsors, we have commercial sponsors. We're in partnership with the Cambridge News, who are very generous with their space and time. We've got a new event, an addition to the programme, which we only signed up 2 weeks ago. Classical actress Fiona Shaw is coming to talk about love poetry. And she's a stunning actress. I mean, probably has been my, long-time favourite actress. And she's done many, many things. But she's part of a project called Peace Camp, which is done with a company in Cambridge, and she is coming. Part of that is reading poetry. Yeah. It's to do with the Cultural Olympiad, and it's reading poetry in beautiful places around the coast of Britain, which is going to take place later this year.
Yeah.
But this event is a trailer for that, and she's going to talk about her passion for love poetry, is going to read some of her favourite love poems, and is inviting the audience to bring along their favourite love poem and read it out.
That sounds absolutely wonderful.
It's going to be our festival finale at 6 o'clock on Sunday night in the Cambridge Union. And I mean, I generally have to go to other festivals to see events that I enjoy, but I always put together events I enjoy. One of my favourites is there's an event by somebody, a poet, a very, very accomplished poet called Matthew Hollis, who actually one of the things I've done this year actually is brought back favourite people from previous years. Matthew Hollis was here as a debut poet many years ago, and he's now written a book which has just won the Costa Nonfiction Prize about the life of poet Edward Thomas. He's in conversation with Robert McFarlane, who's a professor at Emmanuel College here, an English professor, who also writes exquisitely beautiful books. So that should be a terrific pairing. Ian Rankin, you mentioned earlier. Ian Rankin, I've been inviting to the festival. I mean, I've been rejected by Ian Rankin more times than I've had.
How many celebrities do you shoot to get your batch for each session?
Oh, yeah, good question. I am the most rejected person in Cambridge, I think.
Yeah, I do.
I invite a lot. There are a lot of rejections. I would say I probably get 30%. Michael Portillo, bad Tory turned good. I think he's tremendous, actually. I mean, I've admired his, I don't know what I refer to as his humbling, I guess. I mean, he's become the human face of the Tories, I think. Michael Portillo should be fantastic. We've got events on Virginia Woolf, as you just mentioned. Alain de Botton, who was here once before, a philosopher who is just brilliant. He's selling through well at the Cambridge Union. We've got a fantastic crime event on Saturday afternoon with local writer Sophie Hannah, and with a guy called S.J. Watson, whose debut book this year was Before I Go to Sleep, sold more than any debut crime book ever, I think. Really, really successful. And they've teamed up. There's a third person who's a local crime writer, Penny Hancock, and that should be a terrific event.
If you're an emerging artist and want to get some valuable feedback from a pro on your work with a view to exhibiting, or just want to hear some ideas about where to take it next, then local venue Aidan and Abett want to hear from you. Aidan Abett's holding a workshop on the 14th of April to provide portfolio sessions with curator, artist and venue director Matt Roberts, an opportunity for artists to get one-to-one sessions on their work. Roberts is also holding a public evening lecture which asks the question, what is the art world? The art space, just beside Cambridge Rail Station, has just unveiled a large new sculpture made from wood, which provides another piece of art you can get physical with. Co-founder of Aidan Abett, David Kefford, introduces the sculpture and events just coming up.
Well, this is a commissioned artwork by Andrew T. Cross. It's called the Bibliotheque, and it's a structure that is an architectural intervention within the main warehouse space to house and display some of the preparatory drawings and artwork of all of the commissioned artists, the public artwork for the commissioned artists that's coming online this year and next year in this city cultural quarter.
It's made of very bold pieces of wood, and it provides, as well as being a wonderful structure in terms of artistically, it provides a new cafe space for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful, beautifully constructed and built intervention, and it's a multi-functioning space, as I said, to display artwork, but also to be a social space, if you like, for people to come and sit and chat and have a cup of tea and some cake and to talk about the artwork that's going to be displayed in the main space as well.
If anyone wants to have a look at it, you can see it on a web page, can't you?
We've got a website, yes, aidanabett.co.uk. It's a new website, actually, and it's quite a beautiful design. So, yeah, there are different ways of kind of getting involved in the programme through Twitter and Facebook and social networking, but also the website. We're open to the public Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays from midday until 7. This is our first day of opening, so it's very exciting. Open now through until the end of November.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that are coming up in the next couple of months? Because you've got quite a full schedule of things, haven't
you? We've got a very busy schedule, spring programme, and we've had a beautiful brochure that's just been produced by the district, which has listings of all of our activities that's coming up. The next exhibition is called Repair, and it's actually a sculptural exhibition and installation by CJ Miney, who's one of the co-founders of Aid and Abet, and myself as well. And that's opening on the 19th of April. We've also got in our programme a series of discussions and talks and workshops as well from various different people. On the 14th of April, we're hosting some portfolio sessions by Matt Roberts. So it's an opportunity really for artists to book some one-to-one sessions to get feedback from Matt Roberts, and then he'll also be presenting a lecture in the evening. The topic is, what is the art world? Matt Roberts will be doing that. He's got a lot of experience of working in different sectors of the art world. He's a curator, an artist and director of a space, so he's got a lot of experience to give essential feedback to students or emerging artists. So it's a great opportunity for people to get that feedback. Cambridge has actually got quite a bubbling kind of little art community, and we're located very close to Anglia Ruskin University, who've got a really great fine art course and an MA fine art course as well. So we're tending to see a lot of students coming here and volunteering and doing interns. So it's a great space and great opportunity for them to come here and learn.
And is that throwing up some really exciting work at the moment?
It really is, yeah. I think part of our role here as an artist-run space is to really start to connect with artists, students and also other visual arts organisations in the city. So Kettle's Yard, Changing Spaces, Fitzwilliam and also Wising Arts Centre. So we're really starting to feel that there's a bit of a buzz happening with the visual arts in Cambridge at the moment, and this real sense of critical mass of activities that are happening.
There's a rare chance to see works by one of Britain's most popular and prolific artists this month at Clare Hall Gallery. Millions of people know and love the illustrator Quentin Blake, whose work appears in so many children's books and most notably in those of author Roald Dahl. New work featured includes pieces created for a new maternity wing in a hospital in Angers in France, and also recent digital prints and wall hangings are on display. The exhibition will open daily from 9 till 6 at Clare Hall in Herschel Road until April the 30th. And that's all we have time for in this edition of Arts Roundup. I hope you enjoyed the hour.